Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I am your host, Nanny Mitz. Today, we are previewing the upcoming Big 12 bragging rights and a spot in the Big 12 championship race. A game that we all knew was going to be, you know, in that position here at the beginning of the year. Kansas going up to Ames to take on Iowa State, try to get a little bit of revenge for the last time that I was up there. Coming to join the podcast, as he usually does, and coming back to the podcast is Levi Stevenson of Wide Right Natty Light. Levi, how you doing today?
Not too bad. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing all right. So this is exactly the kind of game that we are expecting, right? Stakes and everything?
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
I remember our preview. We were talking about, is Iowa State going to be able to stay out of the basement of the Big 12 this year, just with everything kind of going on and, you know, the whole gambling scandal. And they've come off on the other side. Obviously, there were some hiccups at the beginning of the year.
Right.
I guess I have to ask the question, is it true? Like, it seems like Matt Campbell just does not care about non-conference very much. Is that true, or is there just something else going on?
No, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true. I think it's just a time where I would say it's super, super young. And just one of those things, I don't know. It's a young, super young team. They had replaced half a dozen coaches.
Well, and I heard that the Ohio game was a flu game as well, so.
Yeah, there was like a dozen people that had norovirus going into that game.
Yuck.
It was a gross, gross game on the road. Everyone was sick. It was just a bad time.
Well, then I guess we can forgive them for that. But, of course, since Big 12 play has started, definitely a much different team for Iowa State. What has been the key to getting that turnaround?
I will tell you that, I mean, obviously, you know me. One of the things I've harped on the last 5 years is the offensive line, and the offensive line has taken major steps forward in the last month and a half. They changed their blocking scheme a little bit to fit the personnel better, and it's working. They've done a much better job. The running game has a pulse now. Eli Sanders has really taken off and really embraced the starting running back role, and he's been very, very good. Rocco's been good. Yeah, a little rough game last week, but for the most part, he's been very good. The receiver room has made a big turnaround. Jalen Noel really struggled the first few games of the season. He's been much, much, much better. Jaden Higgins has finally started to get comfortable and carve out a role for himself. Ben Bramer, the freshman tight end, has come on. I think it's just the offense has looked a lot better because they changed things around a little bit. They started not being an air raid team, but they started using the pass to set up the run versus the other way around. And they've done a much better job of not being stubborn and arrogant about trying to set up a run game. They have done a good job of establishing the run as it comes to them rather than trying to be stubborn about it and do it the old school way. They're throwing on first down more often. They're throwing early in the game more often. They're taking a few more chances in the passing game. Not a ton. They're still not like a super aggressive passing game, but they're more than they were. So a little bit of a scheme shift. The offensive line's been better. Some guys starting to get comfortable. Eli Sanders coming into it. It's just been a nice upgrade on offense over the last month, month and a half or so. And those have allowed Iowa State to really win a couple games comfortably and then, you know, put together a nice stretch here where all of a sudden now you're looking confident and Iowa State's tied for first in the conference. It's been really fun to watch. I mean, people are going to look at they lost at Ohio and be like, oh, this is, you know, what is an upset. It's a crap team or whatever, like this or whatever. But to take, Iowa State is one of the youngest teams in college football. And to take a team that was struggling to begin to start the season, they had a bad game on the road, to turn them around now to being 5-3, first place in the, you know, tied for first place in the Big 12 is a tremendous, tremendous coaching job by Matt Campbell. You know, even if they only finish 6-6, 7-5, or whatever it is, if they only win a couple more games or something like that, and it, you know, they finish with a 500 record or, you know, 7-5 or something like that, like Matt Campbell probably deserves to be in contention for Coach of the Year, along with Lance Leipold. I think those two have done a better job than basically anybody else in the conference so far. And there's been a couple really good, like Mike Gundy has done a good job turning that season around. Everyone, I mean, Oklahoma State looked like they were just totally done. Like they just looked like that team was gone.
To be fair, that was Mike Gundy's own doing by playing three different quarterbacks at the beginning of the year. But
it was. But a good coach also knows how to recover and how to.
Oh no, I know that is fair. It is just one of those things, like,
for sure,
right? Yeah.
But like Matt Campbell and Lance Leipold are both should be front runners for Coach of the Year at this point. Just with, you know, Kansas performing above expectation, especially with the backup quarterback. Not that Jason Bean is like a big step down from Jalen Daniels, but you know, it's an interesting story. It's been fun to watch. It's made this season a lot more fun than we thought it was going to be a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I mean, so talking about the offense, because, you know, you talked a little bit about Eli Sanders. This is a team, I think, that Kansas fans and most Big 12 fans are used to seeing a team that relies heavily, heavily on the run. You know, they obviously don't really tend to rely on the run. I mean, they have got, you know, basically twice the number of passing yards as they do rushing yards this year. You know, how has that, like, was that a transformation out of necessity, or is it more of a trying to kind of lean into something else that they're seeing?
I think both. I mean, I think it's people got really used to seeing Iowa State being a heavy run team because you had Dave Montgomery and Breece Hall back to back. And when you have those two guys back to back, it makes it really, really easy to lean on the running game. Right now, I don't know if they have a Breece Hall on the roster or anything like that, but you know, it's partially out of necessity because you don't have just an NFL guy that you can sit back there, give him 25 carries and just watch him go type of thing. But also part of it, too, is realizing that they had become really, really predictable. Like, I mean, they've probably been predictable for about 4 years now or more. Like, the schemes they were running in 2018 and 2019 are the same ones they were running, you know, 2 months ago. But they have a totally different roster, totally different set of skill set, totally different athleticism on the roster. And it's just one of the things I think they finally adjusted to the roster instead of trying to force fit the roster into what they were trying to do. I think they made the right call. It's been much more fluid. The passing scheme has been much more effective. They're still achieving a pretty good balance as far as, you know, as far as how often they call a run or a pass. But they've just done a much better job of scheming guys open, getting guys in good positions, and not being stubborn if something's not working.
Yeah, looking at the resurgence, you know, it seems to have been, well, I mean, there was obviously the game against Oklahoma State that, you know, I think a lot of people thought was going to be a defensive slugfest that turned into a shootout instead. But, you know, since then, I think that offensive resurgence has come against some of the, you know, not so great teams in the Big 12, in TCU, Cincinnati, and Baylor. How much worry is there that this is kind of, you know, them feasting on not so difficult opponents, and then, you know, potentially with, you know, the slate you guys have coming up, Kansas, BYU, Texas, and Kansas State, that it's going to be a lot more difficult to keep up that offensive production?
Well, Cincinnati has the best run defense in the Big 12, so their secondary is not great, but their run defense is very good. They have a very good defensive line as well. So then they were able to run the ball in Cincinnati a little bit, which is really very encouraging to show that wasn't just a fluke being able to do it against TCU and Oklahoma State and whatever else. I think it's one of those where I think playing some easier defenses when they did, I think was a blessing, and not even in disguise, just was a blessing there too, because they were retooling things a little bit. They're reprioritizing running and passing on certain downs or whatever. They're working in a new blocking scheme or whatever it is. And they got to test that out against defenses that weren't highly tuned and really, really elite defenses. So they got a chance to kind of get some scheme ironed out and figure out what works and what doesn't. And I think that's been a big part of it. And now you can take that and use it against better defenses like Texas and Kansas State and whatever else. You can use that now that you – it's no different than – playing an FCS team to start the season in preparation for getting a better opponent later in the season. It's not really any different. So I think getting that at the right time, right when you wanted to change offensive philosophies a little bit, I think was good. So the early results are in, the proof of concept is there. Now they just need to execute against, the rest of the schedule, which is a doable schedule for Iowa State.
Is there anybody else on the offense that hasn't quite had the breakout that you're expecting yet this year?
I think James Neal on the offensive line at left tackle has really struggled. He had a bad game again last week. Maybe they're just going to roll with him and just what it is, because he's just part of the unit. He's just been there for a while. He's been easily the worst lineman this year. Even after the offensive line has made big strides, James Neal has not really progressed all that well.
That's not a great spot to have a problem.
Not really. It's not awesome. Fortunately, they've been doing a good job with supplementing it with tight ends and stuff like this, so they can chip and whatever else. So it hasn't been like – it hasn't just totally ruined everything. But you'd prefer not to have to dedicate a tight end to a pass block every time or something like that.
Right.
Have to use the running back as a pass blocker every time. That's probably the one. But, if you'd asked me 2 months – it asked me a month and a half ago after the Ohio game, I'd probably have a different answer for you. But Jalen Noel's been much better. Jaden Higgins has really started to come into his own the last few weeks. Eli Sanders has been good. Rocco Beck's been – I think he's been well above expectations as far as what Rocco was going to do. Offensively, generally pretty happy with where we're at right now. We've got a few good receivers that can really stand out. The tight ends, Ben Bramer is a stud. He's going to be – if he stays here for 4 years, he's going to probably break a lot of Charlie Kohler's records.
Which is saying something.
He's a stud. He runs and looks like a receiver, but he's 6'6", 250. He's a load, and he's a big-time matchup problem. If they start sending him down the seam, that's a big, big matchup problem. He's faster than Charlie Kohler was. He runs a lot more like a receiver. So that's lots of encouraging things. There's still some just young freshman-type mistakes or whatever, some young team mistakes that happen once in a while, some procedure penalties here and there, whatever else. But they're learning, they're growing pretty quickly. And I'm very pleased with the overall trajectory of the offense. They can always be better, but I'm very pleased with the trajectory of the unit.
So when you look at this Kansas defense, what part of it do you think matches up well against what Iowa State tries to do offensively? Or I should say, what are the worries about the Iowa State offense that you think a team like Kansas could potentially exploit?
The weaknesses, the offensive line, like I said, this season the run blocking hasn't been great. If they can shoot some gaps and blow up the running in the backfield and force Iowa State to really throw the ball downfield, that could be an issue. Jaden Higgins has caught balls downfield. Jalen Noel's capable of doing that, but that's not something that Iowa State does a lot. It doesn't seem like they're super comfortable with chucking deep passes or whatever. So if Kansas can slow up the running game and force Iowa State and basically force Rocco to win the game on offense for them, that's probably how I would. That's how I would attack Iowa State, is try to basically eliminate the running game and force Rocco to beat you downfield. If he's allowed to work in that 5 to 15 yard range, he's very, very comfortable there. Anything beyond that is his deep balls have not been awesome.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think that's the part where Kansas has made the biggest stride coming into the year over the course of this year is being able to bring that consistent pressure, force opponents into pretty quick decisions and, requiring them to kind of load up and just launch it if they're going to try to get the ball down the field. You saw them, you know, get after Dylan Gabriel and force him into some bad throws in the last game. I think the thing that concerns me, obviously, is that Kansas plays defense completely differently on the road than they do at home. So we'll see how much of that actually translates. But at least on paper, they have, I think, the ability to rush the passer and to get in the backfield enough that it could be a concern. I think if Kansas is able to have a lot of defensive success, that's probably how they do it. It's just gum everything up at the line and get some guys in there to collapse the pockets.
The challenge that the Kansas defense is going to face is what, you know, playing at home, and like you said, playing at home and playing on the road are different things. And Iowa State is playing, they're playing in Jack Trice at night. And that's not nothing.
Well, yeah, we saw that like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Playing at Jack Trice at night is not nothing. I mean, it's not to Vegas, but it's probably worth, you know, an extra half a point on the betting line, or an extra half, just playing at Jack Trice at night specifically is probably another half a point or a point on the betting line if you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's going to be a raucous crowd that is pushing against them. So the challenge for the Kansas defense is to maintain the effort and intensity through an entire game when there is a crowd of 61,500 people cheering against them very, very loudly.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump over to the defense, because, you know, I do think that this defense struggled again, beginning of the year, but seems to have come on a lot better. This one is probably the one that I'm more concerned about if I'm looking from the outside of, you know, were they taking advantage of teams that are struggling offensively? Because, you know, TCU, Cincinnati, and Baylor have all had significant issues on offense this year. So first of all, how much of it is kind of the level of competition that's allowed them to get better? But what has kind of progressed throughout the year for this defense to allow them to kind of put up better stats?
Well, the linebackers are getting better. That's been probably the weakest unit on the defense, but they're really, 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 really young. And just a lot of new people, new faces in that room in general. The secondary has been as advertised. They've been outstanding the entire year. Iowa State is second in the country in interceptions right now. And after game five, I think they cleared their 2021 total in interceptions. And they're second in the country right now. I mean, they are full on ball hawks in this season, which is a welcome sight. And it's something that I talked about at length in the offseason, saying, hey, if you've got the talent in the secondary right now, if there's ever a time to try to take a couple more chances, generate a few more picks, you know, maybe give up an extra big, you know, extra couple big plays, but generate a few more picks and get turnovers and get extra possessions for your young offense, this is the year to do it. You've got the people to do it. And they have done that in spades. They've given up a couple more big plays, but they've also generated twice as many interceptions as they usually have. They've got, I think three guys now. Jeremiah Cooper and Bo Freeler are both like in the top 10 nationally in interceptions individually. And then TJ Tampa's got a couple of them. Malik Verdon's got one or two. But as a team, I would say the second in the country in interceptions, which is a big deal. If there was ever anything you could knock John Haycock about, which there's very little, if any, but if there was any part of his defense that you could say, they could do this better, was generating more turnovers. Well, they're doing that now. They're generating a lot of turnovers now. And quarterbacks that are not super, super careful with the ball have gotten burnt on a few different occasions. I mean, Emory Jones, they made his life a hell for a while. And TCU threw four picks, stuff like that, you know, just as a team. And it's one of the things they've done a much, much better job of that. So the defense is, you know, it's probably a little bit of a step back from last year, but last year's defense was top five nationally. I mean, it was a like playoff level defense. And they just didn't have an offense to pair with it. This year is probably taking a little bit of a step back just because the defensive line and the linebackers are really young. But the secondary, like I said, is as advertised. It's outstanding. It's the best secondary in the Big 12 and one of the best in college football. It's really, really, really good. Makes life very, very difficult for teams, especially trying to pass downfield.
What about the rushing defense? Like, I mean, I see that the numbers are lower than passing, but that's typical. you know, are there particular types of rushing attacks that tend to be much better against this defense? Or
yeah, so the way you attack the Iowa State's 3-3 stack, so if you try to run up the middle or you try to bounce it to the edges, that's where Iowa State eats you alive, because that they're either trying to clog up the middle and then bounce you outside where the safeties can hit you. But where teams are best and where they hit Iowa State the hardest at is right off of the tackle, right on the outside of the tackles. You're just going right there, because what that does is it gets outside of the clog in the middle and it comes inside of the safeties. So the safeties are covering anything bouncing to the outside. So if you get right off that tackle, and maybe if you have a lead blocker coming right off the tackle, like an H-back or something like that, that's where you're going to do the most damage against Iowa State's 3-3 stack, because you're not playing into the clog and you're not playing into the spill. You're playing right in between. And that's typically where teams have the best success running the ball. Baylor's wide zone is kind of designed to go there, but Iowa State sort of adjusts things a little bit specifically when they play Baylor, because because Baylor's run game is basically scheme.
Right. It's literally spots. Just that.
Right. Yeah. So then they just change a little bit and refocus things a little bit to deal with that. But against teams that don't do a wide zone run scheme like Baylor does, that's usually the more vulnerable spot.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I know that Kansas
State can be good at hitting those ones at times as well.
So. Yeah, well, I was going to say, because Kansas is, I mean, they don't really have a particular spot. I think they like to go outside more, and they definitely bring extra blockers out to the edge, which might give Iowa State some trouble if they don't, you know, adjust a little bit to the outside.
Because Iowa State's safeties are so good at closing down on the outside. That's the whole thing. I mean, that's the whole way that Iowa State stops the run game, is you just have the defense clog it up, and then the safeties spill down to the sides. So running to the outside is tough, because even if you're bringing lead blockers, usually that, because if they're bringing a lead blocker, they're just going to bring another safety, or they're going to bring another linebacker over to account for that type of thing. So what you want to do there in that case is, if you're establishing tendency to the outside with an H-back or something like that as a lead blocker, what you then is you run counter to the other
safety. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's just stuff like that. Like, it's trying to just run between the tackles or just bounce things to the outside, even with pitches and stuff like that, it typically plays right into what Iowa State is trying to do, stopping the run. So you're either going off tackle or you're running more misdirection and things like that. That's going to be your ticket.
Yeah, I think that's going to be probably the part that's going to be the most interesting to watch, is how does Kansas approach that? Because they have had success on the inside, they've had success on the outside, they've had success kind of, you know, triple option, doing, you know, mm-hmm. RPOs, reversing the other way. They have so many different options on what they can do.
Offense is super creative about getting guys into space and stuff like that. Like, I'm very jealous of your guys' team. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Andy Kotelnicki is an offensive genius, so it's great to watch him work and see what he's able to do. And look, honestly, I'm definitely afraid of Lance Leipold leaving at some point, but I'm also just as afraid of what happens.
To the party, buddy.
When Andy Kotelnicki decides that he's ready to be a head coach. Now we're
the same way with Nate Shielhaas. Is like we're just hang on as long as we can and just
exactly. So
just understand that's just how the world works if he leaves.
Yeah, you know, I think we've got a little bit of hope in that they've been together for so long. I mean, 11 years coaching together is, you know. You would think he probably would have,
right?
You probably would have thought he would have jumped at an opportunity at some point, potentially. But yeah. So, I guess rest of this defense, though, you know, because Kansas has done, I think, a fairly good job of mixing it up, especially Jason Bean with his, you know, deep throws. He has shown he has a cannon for an arm. He can get it way down there. I think obviously that this defensive secondary for Iowa State is just as good. As they usually are, but are there instances where the passing game, you know, or I should say, are there specific things about a passing game that can find some unusual success against the secondary?
The spot that they've gone at the last few weeks, they've gone after Miles Purchase, so not TJ Tam, but the other side of the field.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Emory Jones tried going after TJ Tampa and that didn't go. Mike Gundy went after TJ Tampa. That didn't go very well either.
No, it's just like Kobe Bryant for the Jayhawks. He's been upset, like, you know, upset recently because people don't throw the ball his way anymore. And it's because when they do, he does stuff.
Yeah, typically the best way you're going to like be able to try to really test Iowa State secondary is to go at Miles Purchase and to try to take him deep. He's still been pretty good covering deep balls, but if there's a vulnerability, it's there, probably him covering deep balls. You know, you might be able to get one or two in the game or something like that against him. And he's like, if he gets matched up man to man against a quick receiver, especially coming across on a crossing route or something like that. He can be vulnerable there just because his sprints, his straight line speed isn't as good as other players or whatever like that. But if he's allowed to sit in a zone, a lot of times he's very, very good. But going after Miles Purchase, especially on deep routes and crossing routes, that's probably going to be your ticket if you're going to try to win in the passing game.
Yeah, speaking of ticket to win, you can find an absolutely great ticket to win some of the best possible apparel that you can find, collegiate apparel, with our sponsor here on the podcast, the Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a clothing company based out of Kansas City that has vintage-inspired collegiate apparel. They have more than 30 different schools, and they have absolutely fantastic stuff. The most recent thing that they've added that I am still trying to find a way to be able to get myself is they have a Big 12 Conference t-shirt that has the Kansas City skyline. That came out right around Big 12 Media Day for the basketball, so perfect timing there. But they have a great Kansas line, great Iowa State line. They have, you know, all of the Big 12 schools except for Cincinnati, and the stuff is just amazing. They have individual player shirts. They have, you know, all kinds of hoodies, bomber jackets, just tons of great stuff. If you go over to charliehustle.com, use promo code 101215, that's TEN1215, you can get 15% off of all non-sale items over there. And man, it's great stuff. I highly recommend you head on over there. But Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. All right, I do want to talk about the specifics of the game, kind of our expectations, and then a little bit about this conference race, which is all of a sudden just absolutely the most ludicrous thing that I've ever seen. But before we do that, I need to throw to a quick break. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back. I'm here with Levi Stevenson of Wide Right Natty Light, talking, of course, Iowa State and all of the ridiculousness that is the Big 12 this season. So I guess let's actually start with the Big 12 race, because, I mean, we've got five teams that are all 4-1, with Kansas and West Virginia at 3-2 right behind. This looks like it's probably going to be one of the wildest conference races that we've seen in a really long time.
It's kind of wacky, and that's kind of expected. That's kind of what I expected going to this more expanded conference, having these extra teams in here too, because now you have a schedule where not everybody's playing everybody. You know, it's not a full round robin anymore. So, you know, usually when you're playing a full round robin, eventually two or three usually shake themselves out at the top towards the end, just because you're playing everybody. But now you have teams that have different schedules with each other, you know, with the rest of the conference. So you can have a few different teams bubble to the top, even just because they're not necessarily playing everybody. Like Iowa State and Texas haven't played yet or anything like that. So, you know, and Iowa State isn't going to play UCF, and they're not going to play Houston or anything like that. So, you know, it's kind of,
unfortunately, right?
Whatever. I mean, no offense to Houston. It's just not a team on my radar.
I just meant, you know, being able to play another opponent that you should beat rather simply.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and UCF has kind of turned out to be a big old fraud burger, too. So I think they'll get better eventually, but UCF kind of sucks. I'm glad that they've kind of gotten put in their place, because they thought, we're going to come in, we're going to challenge at the top, we're going to go to the conference. Blah, blah, blah. No.
It's going to be even more glorious when it happens to Utah next year.
I think Utah will hang out around for a year or two.
No, I know. I think Utah will probably they are ones where I probably see them in the middle of the pack next year, whereas UCF, I thought their ceiling was probably like top. You know, like right at that third of the conference mark. So probably like, you know, fifth or sixth. Whereas Utah could challenge to be in Arlington potentially if stuff breaks right for them.
I think they will probably next year. Yeah. I think Utah has a chance to kind of fall off, because a lot of the recruiting right now is based in California and on the West Coast and stuff like that. And like, and specifically, Utah has a lot of Polynesian players always.
Yeah, they do.
And because they're from like Southern California and stuff like that, well, the Big 12 is not playing in Southern California anymore. So they're not playing near home, family and friends or anything like that anymore. So the recruiting base is going to have to change a little bit. So, you know, is Utah going to be able to recruit at the same level when they can't, you know, get their pick of the litter basically in a good chunk of California and things like that? It'd be interesting to see it. Their recruiting is going to have to change because they just can't. They can't cater to the same to the recruits the same way they used to.
Yeah, definitely also, not. But I
would really like to see Utah suck. That would make me very happy because their fans are the worst.
We had a Utah guy come on the 10-12 and he kind of explained some of the situation. It's like, I understand that somewhat, but there's also a big difference between, you know, fighting and clawing like a UCF did coming from, you know, thinking that they were going to be in a Power 5 and then the conference got cut out from underneath them to getting to be a Power 5 and now moving to another Power 5. You know, so there are definitely some differences there. It's not quite apples to apples, but I definitely think that this is a situation where the, you know, the way that this is setting up is going to be, it's going to be the absolute most insane conference moving forward because you have so many different teams. Like there is no, I don't think there's a clear team or a clear program that you can point to and say, that's probably going to be a team that's going to be in the top three every single year.
Yeah, not really. I mean, there's a handful that you can look at. Like, these are probably going to, this is going to be kind of the group that hangs out near the top. Like, I mean, like you're looking at like Utah and probably Oklahoma State, Kansas State, things like, you know, those types of teams. You're going to like those, like there's some group that you're going to look at. They're going to be near, probably near the top of that most years. You got to get another group that's like Iowa State and Kansas and TCU and stuff like that, that are probably going to be hanging out near the top a lot of years, but also can fall back in certain off years or if you have a big graduating class or something like that. I think you've got to clear like a top half and a bottom half.
Right.
But that's kind of about it. You know, beyond that, that's, you know, it's going to be a wide open conference. I don't think there's no clear front runner or anything like that, which I'm fine with.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be extremely interesting. But looking at this Big 12 race, because you've got five teams, you know, tied. You've got two teams right behind. I think it's fair to say all seven of those teams are still in the race. Is there anybody that jumps out to you as a, hey, they're probably going to fall off here pretty quick just because either because of the schedule or because you think that they've been extremely fortunate with the way that they've been able to kind of get through?
Let's see who's in that four-way team. Who's in that tie at the top?
So it's Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Texas, Iowa State, and Kansas State.
I think Kansas State could fall back. I know they're playing really well lately with Avery Johnson, but I think people are going to figure that out. Texas maybe with Quinn Ewers being out, and maybe for a while too. I think that could be a team that falls back. Oklahoma State, let's say they've got Bedlam left. I'm trying to remember what the rest of their schedule looks like. They've
not got, very much. It's a lot Oklahoma, of.
They got Bedlam, then UCF, Houston, BYU. They can, I mean, they can close that out 3-1, no problem.
Yeah. The one that I'm curious about is BYU, but like Oklahoma State, they host BYU at the end.
I just don't think BYU is ready yet. I think to me that looks like a G5 team that's playing in a Power 5 conference.
I definitely think that they play much better at home than they do on the road. And I think that has a huge part to do with like what we've seen from them this year. But
I'm sure the altitude's not a non-zero factor.
Oh yeah, yeah. So
it is a non-zero factor. So like that's why I'm a little bit curious to see how we play going out there in a couple weeks.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to kind of see how all of that plays out. So
yeah, but yeah, there's. I'd like to see Kansas State and Texas fall back because Iowa State plays them, but you know that's just one of those things. It would be fascinating though, is if like two of Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Kansas State, if two of those three end up floating to the top and those play for the title, you know, championship game instead of Oklahoma and Texas, I think that'd be pretty funny. Just to so that like neither Oklahoma or Texas makes the conference championship.
Oh, I think that'd be freaking awesome. So
I think that'd be fabulous.
I'm pulling for it. We need some Oklahoma. Like we need Oklahoma to lose to Oklahoma State. We need Texas to drop a couple. Which I mean, they play Kansas State. They play, you know, you guys. So there's definitely
Iowa State, and I would be shocked if it's not a night game.
Oh, it's definitely going to be a night game. There's no way.
Texas has not finished a game in Ames in daylight since 2008. We always play Texas at night at Jack.
In other words, there's no reason to change that.
Correct.
All right.
Complained about it.
Well, okay, so I mean, let's go ahead and jump here, because like I think the winner of this game, you know, between Kansas and Iowa State, has a good shot to potentially make a push. You know, honestly, I think the winner of Kansas State, Texas, let me actually rephrase that. I think the loser of this game is probably out of the race. Potentially. Well, maybe not for sure.
Iowa State would still have Texas and Kansas State left over.
So no, that's true. That's true.
You can pick up tiebreakers there. So if Kansas loses, they're probably out. But yes. If they win, they've put themselves back in.
Right, right. Because they'll still have Kansas State left that they could knock back down. You have to think that Texas is going to take another loss without yours. You have to think that either Oklahoma or Oklahoma State are going to take a loss. And then you're looking at the potential of a two-way tie, or I'm sorry, of like a three- or four-way tie for that second spot. And, right. You know, Kansas will theoretically at that point, if they win, they'll have tiebreakers over Iowa State, Kansas State, and Oklahoma. So you have to feel pretty good about that, you know, that situation. The real question, of course, becomes, you know, who has that one spot? If it's Oklahoma State, that's actually good for Kansas, just because, you know, obviously losing to them. And, of course, Texas, like, they have to fall off pretty far anyway. But it'll be interesting to see. But let's take a look at this actual game itself. I mean, we've kind of talked a little bit about offense, defense for both sides of the ball. What do you think is going to be the most important factor going into this game that's going to decide who wins?
I think the biggest factor in this is going to be Jason Bean's legs. We saw last week how much damage he can do in the run game, because he's got wheels, he can cook. So fortunately, we'll see. Well, mobile quarterbacks are a problem for every football team that's ever existed. Mobile quarterbacks are a problem. They just are. Iowa State has a guy on the roster, he's a linebacker named Zach Lovett. They put him on Emory Jones. They put him on, TCU starting quarterback. What the hell's his name?
Chandler Morris,
who's a good runner. Emory Jones, Chandler Morris. They put him on a few different guys and spied them totally out of the game. I would be shocked if that's not the game plan against Jason Bean on Saturday, is to stick Zach Lovett as a spy on him. And ideally, Iowa State is going to force Jason Bean to beat Iowa State with his arm and against our secondary. I would be shocked if that's not game plan number one, is force Jason Bean to win with his arm and do it by throwing directly into Iowa State's secondary. And at that point, if he still does it, then it just kind of is what it is. But I think that's going to be Iowa State's game plan going into this.
Yeah, I think the way that Kansas needs to attack that to kind of avoid that being a huge issue is, you know, they've done it in the past where, like with Oklahoma and with, you know, BYU and UCF, like, get those intermediate passes started, right? Like, get him in a rhythm, get him looking down the field, making good reads, getting the ball out fairly quickly. And then the defense has to be prepared for that. And then you shake up the timing. Does he go and take off on a run off to the side where they're not expecting it? You know, does he hold the ball for a little bit because the guys assume they're going to have it? He's going to have it out before they can get there. And then, you know, throw it deep. You've got to be able to kind of change it up. But you're right. Like, Jason Bean, I think that's the big difference, though, this time between, you know, this time and then last year and even the year before, is that the way that Kansas plays now, they're not just looking for quarterbacks to run. Like, that was, I think, the biggest problem when they came up to Ames 2 years ago. Well, in addition to, you know, some of the other big issues that they had defensively. But, you know, just offensively, like, you had really good runners in Jason Bean and Devin Neal. The problem was that they were always looking to run. They were always heading to the outside. There wasn't any kind of variety. This is a team, I think, that's really good variety-wise, not just in terms of, you know, mixing up pass and running, but they've got Daniel Hyshaw, who runs one way. They've got Devin Neal that runs a completely different way. And then Jason Bean, you can sprinkle in his, you know, there's a reason they like to run him. He is widely credited as the fastest guy on the entire team, which is kind of crazy for your backup quarterback. So that's going to be interesting. I think it's going to give them a lot of opportunities to kind of figure out what exactly it is they want to do. But yeah, I do think that you're right. Like, his ability to run, I think if he can pick his spots to run and not run because he's running for his life, then that's going to go a huge way to allowing them to kind of settle in. I do also think defensively, you know, I think Kansas is going to have to find a way to take something away, whether it's make it so that Rocco Beck isn't passing all over the place and they're having to focus on the run because it's the only thing that's even mildly successful, or taking away the run and making it so that Rocco Beck just has to pass. And, you know, if you get him in pass only mode, it's only a matter of time before guys like Kobe Bryant, Romello Dotson, Kenny Logan are able to hone in and pick off a couple passes. If you can get them to just run, we saw what happened against Oklahoma last week where you had tons of guys in the backfield. And even if you like, you know, hitting guys in the backfield, they would still get a yard or two, but it would limit them to a yard or two instead of 7, 8, 9, you know, 15 yard runs. So I think that those are kind of the two ways that you have to approach it. I guess the real question is just going to be how well are they actually able to do that?
Yeah. I mean, it's Johnny Haycock's one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. I'm sure he's got something cooked up. I hope it works. I hope everyone executes as well. And I'm assuming that they will put, you'll hear Zach Lovett's name quite a bit as a spy trying to shut down Jason Bean's legs. And then if they do that and you force Jason Bean to try to win with his arm, you know, I'm obviously going to take Iowa State secondary in that, but I'm also biased. So, you know.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well,
that's going to be the game plan for slowing Kansas down.
But yeah, I'm going to be honest too. If they force Jason Bean to throw quite a bit, I mean, he's going to make mistakes. They're going to get interceptions. So, you know, and I really do think it comes down to Kansas cannot afford to play slow at the beginning of the game. Like they have to, whether it's a good defensive stop or the offense getting a really good run, you know, a really good offensive drive in the first two drives. They cannot afford, I think, up in Ames, they can't afford to go down like 14-0, 17-0, something like that, and try to claw back. I think they could do it. The problem is you make it infinitely more hard on yourself to actually stay in that game because it's a different animal coming back on the road against, you know,
Iowa State. That right now, the key to beating Matt Campbell as a general is to get out to a good start and force Iowa State to come back.
Yeah.
When leading at halftime under Matt Campbell, Iowa State is 25-0. They have never lost when leading at halftime under Matt Campbell.
Okay, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like that stat.
there are very few people in this league that are better at playing with a lead than Matt Campbell.
Man.
So if Iowa State can get out to a good start, like I said, and get a halftime lead, I'm going to feel a lot better about our chances. Because halftime is when John Haycock really tightens things down, and that's where the defense starts to get a lot saltier.
Right.
So that's where it gets a lot tougher sledding for the other team in the second half. So that's a lot where that stat comes from, is the defense really tightening up in that second half.
That makes sense. I still don't like it, but that makes sense.
Fair enough. You know, I'm looking at like the way that they slowed down Emory Jones with Cincinnati, it's I think the way they're going to try to approach Kansas. Now, Kansas is a much more creative team offensively than Cincinnati, but Emory Jones and Jason Bean are stylistically fairly similar. Big arm quarterbacks that are really, really good runners. Now, Cincinnati's probably, they run Emory Jones as a primary runner more often than Kansas does with Jason Bean. But, you know, I'm looking at Emory Jones average less than 4 yards a carry. And that's with a lot of quarterback design quarterback runs, or actually just a little over 4 yards a carry, less than 5 yards a carry. But, you know, that was with some scrambles and things like that. You know, I think I would say they did a good job of containing him and taking him out of the game plan. I think they're going to try to do something similar with Jason Bean on Saturday.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else about this team or this game that you think people need to know before we get out of here?
I mean, like I said, the playing at Jack Trice at night is a real thing, and they've got fireworks scheduled for the game. It's going to be rowdy. Because all of a sudden this game means a whole lot. It's a big game, sold out crowd. It's going to be rowdy, rowdy, rowdy. And that is an environment that is difficult for other people to play, for other teams to play in.
Like I said, I was not happy that this is a much more
6 o'clock kick.
Yeah. Well, I'm not happy that this is a much more, I guess, important matchup for both of these teams. That it actually has a good meaning for both of these teams being in the Big 12 race. But, you know, if you're Kansas and you're expecting to be in the Big 12 race, you're going to have plenty of these types of games. So it's only a matter of time before they're going to have to deal with them anyway. So, all right. Well, for those that do not know, which I don't know how they would not know already at this point, but where can everybody find your work covering Iowa State?
That's at WideRTNetLT on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, wideride90light.com.
Always Twitter.
Twitter's fine. Yep. I think I just call it Twitter all the time.
Oh yeah.
Habit.
Yep.
We've got Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page. We do a couple podcasts a week on the Wide Ride 90 Light Podcast Network on anywhere you get podcasts. And on Wednesday nights, we do the Nightcap, which Andy will be on Wednesday. I don't know when this is coming out, but
this will be coming out after the Nightcap, but we are recording it before the Nightcap. So it'll be interesting.
Wednesdays at 8 o'clock, we go live on YouTube we're on Twitter too or whatever. And, doing the Nightcap. It's kind of our take on a late night show.
And before we get out of here for the night, one last quick segment for you guys. Something that we typically do here, and it is sponsored by our sponsor here on the podcast, that is Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the legal way to play daily fantasy. They are available in almost every state, and they have a bunch of different lines for you to take a look at. They have individual player, I guess, not props, but player decisions that you can make in terms of different stats for different players, and you can take full advantage. They have tons of stuff from NFL, NBA, NHL, college football. They have League of Legends. They have all kinds of stuff that you can mix and match, pick anywhere from 2 to 6 players, and you get either you either pick more or less than the projections that they have out for them. They have a ton of them for the Jayhawks and the Cyclones. This week they have Jason Bean at 199.5 yards, so basically does he pass for 200 yards or less. Rocco Beck they have just higher at 221.5. I do think that the Jason Bean one, for this particular game, if Kansas is going to win, they're going to have to get it, very, very, or they're going to have to be pretty much higher than that. So, but, Devin Neal rushing yards, 89.5 rushing yards, Eli Sanders for Iowa State, 53.5. I do think that the Devin Neal one is probably a little bit low. He's been very, very good, except for in a few instances, and been able to get a ton of yards. So, wide receiver receiving yards, Jaden Higgins for ISU at 53.5, Jalen Noel at 57.5, and then on the Kansas side, 47.5 for Lawrence Arnold, 25.5 for Luke Grimm, and then 36.5 for Mason Fairchild. I'm going to be honest, I think each of those are something that each of those players for the Jayhawks could get in a single throw. So it's really just a matter of, how many catches do they actually get. I do think that Mason Fairchild is probably a good bet to be able to go ahead and actually get over on that. And then they even have kicking points. They have Seth Keller with 6.5 kicking points. So that's, 2 field goals and an extra point or a whole bunch of extra points. It's the same thing for Chase Contreras, for ISU at 6.5 kicking points. I don't know that I'm going to bet on either that I would pick either of those just because of how difficult it is, to really, really figure out, exactly what it is there. But, so make sure you guys head over to prizepicks.com. If you use promo code CHALK12, you can get a 100% match up to your first $100 on your deposit. So get in there, enjoy, use all of your sports knowledge to have a little bit of fun, hit on some projections and make a little bit of money. PricePicks.com, again, promo code CHALK12 to get you that match there. So, But that is going to go ahead and do it for us today. Thank you guys so much for listening. Levi, thank you so much for joining me. If you guys have not already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Podcast and subscribe. Get every episode as soon as it comes out. Give us a rating and a review. 5 stars, nice comments. It'd be absolutely fantastic. But if for whatever reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys, get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We are, of course, part of the 10-12 Podcast Network, covering all the teams in the Big 12 Conference, including all of the new teams that are here. We have tons of shows. You can find links to all the great shows over at 1012network.com. Make sure you guys visit our Patreon as well, patreon.com/1012network. We have some great stuff over there. And I promise we are going to have even more stuff as basketball kicks off. But that's going to do it for us today. Make sure you visit our sponsors. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.